essence of chapter 1, verse 19. What does that verse happen to say? Anything? It's kind of a key verse. What, you don't have to have it perfectly memorized, but what's it say? What was John to write? The things he has seen, the things that are, and the things that will be hereafter. So we sense that that is kind of an outline of what he was supposed to write about. And chapter 1 was the things which he had seen. And what was that? We call that the vision of the glorified Christ. We have that vision there in chapter 1 of Jesus Christ. And that was that which he had seen. And then what is the section of the things which are? The letters to the seven churches in Asia Minor. So those were chapters 2 and 3. Those are the where we have those seven letters recorded for us. And so we spent quite a little time studying those. But the majority of the book is the things which shall be hereafter. And so that is everything from chapter 4 through chapter 22. All right, 22. There's 22 chapters in the book. And so 4 through 22 is the things which shall be hereafter. And so we're right in the middle of that because the majority of this section deals with a time we call the tribulation period or the time of Jacob's troubles. So we are finding ourselves studying that, and along the way, we are about halfway through that tribulation period in our study thus far. So we're about 3.5 years through the 7-year tribulation period. And we have found all kinds of trumpet judgments, and we have found all kinds of seal judgments taking place in this passage thus far. And we've been introduced to some very important players in this whole end times study. We have been looking at those the last couple of weeks. And now in chapter 13, where we have kind of camped for a couple of weeks, we are now looking at two personages called the beast from the sea and the beast from the earth. And we have identified the beast from the sea as being whom? The Antichrist. And who have we identified as being the beast from the earth? False prophet. And putting together Satan and Antichrist and the false prophet, someone has said we have then an evil trinity here of these three personages. Now, last week when we ended our study together, we were looking together at some more information about the Antichrist. And we were looking a little bit at what his role was and how he was compared to the real Christ and being the counterpart or the counterfeit of the real Christ. And on the back of supplement 23, which was where we stopped last week, we were looking at a little bit about the roles of the Antichrist. And his roles are going to change, aren't they? When he first comes here to be on this earth, what role will he be given? He will be a peacemaker. And I have this for you on the back of that sheet. He will be a peacemaker. And so as a peacemaker, let's read some of these passages that I have listed for you here on that. And so let's look at Revelation 6. I know we're in chapter 13, but we'll look at some things here in Revelation 13 in a moment. So Revelation 6, and it says in verse 1 and 2, "And I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard as it were the noise of thunder, one of the four beasts saying, 'Come and see.' And I saw, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer." And so we have a conqueror who's coming. Now, this is not the same personage that comes riding on a white horse later in chapter 19, because that's who? Jesus Christ himself. So this is another conqueror who comes. Remember, he's the Antichrist. So riding on a white horse, if he's pretending to be the counterfeit Christ, he will come. But here it doesn't say anything about peace, does it? He's coming to conquer. But notice chapter 17. Go over to Revelation 17. And it tells us in verse 12, "And the ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind, and shall give their power and strength unto the beast." They're going to give their strength and power unto the beast. It almost sounds like they're going to surrender without even a fight. Revelation 19:11. "And I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat upon him was called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he doth judge and make war." And so here is Christ coming, but the first Antichrist, the one who comes as a counterfeit Christ, he will come as the peacemaker. I have no definitive reason to believe this, other than I think it's very probable that when the church will be raptured, that this individual will already be on the scene somewhere in the world. Because I don't believe that there are huge gaps of time in between the rapture and the beginning of the tribulation period. There may be a short period of time. We don't necessarily believe that the moment the rapture takes place that the tribulation is going to start. The tribulation follows it. But I believe that the Antichrist will probably already be living on this earth at the time of the rapture. And he will be a peaceful political leader who unites the 10 nations of Europe into a strong power block. And we saw that there in chapter 17, that all of these ones that the 10 horns are 10 kings, and kingdoms don't have kingdoms as yet, but power, they give their power 1 hour with the beast. And so they're only going to reign for a short time, and then they're going to give over to them. This rider that we saw in chapter 6 imitates the rider that we read about in chapter 19. And then notice 1 Thessalonians 4. We have to include this in our understanding of this passage. So let's go back to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Says, "But of the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you, for yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape." So they're going to say peace and safety, and this one who is the Antichrist will come originally as a peacemaker. And then after a short time of peace, then that day of the Lord will break forth here upon the earth, the day of wrath. But not only is he the peacemaker, but in his roles, various roles, secondly, he is a protector. Protector primarily for whom? Israel. And so if you go back into the Old Testament to the book of Daniel chapter 9, and you'll see verse 12, "And he hath confirmed his words, which he spake against us and against our judges that judged us, by bringing upon us a great evil. For under the whole heaven hath not been done as hath been done upon Jerusalem. As it is written in the law of Moses, all this evil has come upon us. Yet made we not our prayer before the Lord our God, that we might turn from our iniquities and understand thy truth. Therefore hath the Lord watched upon evil and brought upon it upon us. For the Lord our God is righteous in all his works which he doeth, for we obeyed not his voice. And now, O Lord our God, thou hast brought thy people forth out of the land of Egypt with a mighty hand, and hast gotten thee renown, as at this day we have sinned, we have done wickedly. And so as we come down, they have been under the, you know what? I didn't think that made sense to me. Go to verse 24 and 9:24. Change that reference there from 9:12 to 9:24. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people, upon thy whole city, to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, and to make reconciliation for iniquity, and to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. So we have 70 weeks. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah, the Prince, shall be 7 weeks, and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again, and the wall even in troublesome times. And after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood, and unto the end of the war desolations are determined. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. So he's going to confirm a covenant. And what's this covenant going to say? The covenant's going to be a covenant of protection, going to promise to care for them. And so this covenant is going to be confirmed. But unfortunately, in the midst of the week, what's going to happen? He's going to break that covenant. And so the peacemaker and the protector, thirdly, becomes the peacebreaker. And we read about that in verse 27 of 9. He shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. And in the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. And for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate even until the consummation. And that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. And so we have this, and Matthew 24 speaks about this terrible time when we will see this eventual breaking of the covenant. And then after that, once the covenant is broken and the peace breaker does his job, then what we've been reading about in Revelation 13, the Antichrist now becomes the persecutor. And in Revelation 13, again, verse 15, and he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. And so he is going to be the persecutor. And there's going to be great trial and problem there. But praise God, what's his final end going to be? The prisoner. And Revelation 19 talks again about when Christ comes, that rider on the white horse. And verse 19 says of 19, and I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him, with which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast and them that worshipped his image. These both were cast alive into the lake of fire burning with brimstone. And so he's going to be the everlasting prisoner. And so we see his various roles from peacemaker to prisoner. Now, let's move on. Just a few more things about the beast before we move into new material. And we have some symbolism going on here. And so if you want to go back to chapter 13, and we have some symbolism taking place here. And look at some of that symbolism is given to us in chapter 13, but we see some additional of that symbolism in chapter 19. Or 17. Let's go to chapter 17. It says in verse 9, and here is the mind which hath wisdom. To seven heads are what? Seven mountains. And so we have an interpretation given for us of seven heads that were represented back in chapter 13. And it says there in verse 1, he rose up out of the sea having seven heads. So what do the seven heads represent? Revelation 17 tells us it represents seven mountains. Well, what do the seven mountains represent? Well, most Bible scholars who have really studied this in detail believe that it's a reference to Rome, which was built on seven hills. And so perhaps we have a reference to that. And actually back in 17:18 it says, "And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth." And so it's talking about a city. It's talking about seven hills. And why would this description accompany the beast? Why would this symbolism be taking place? Because not only does he come in as a false conqueror, a false peacemaker, a false Christ, but he also is working together with a false religion. And so we see them working together, the beast here and a false system, which is more than likely the false Roman system. Now, what else do we have? Not only do we have seven heads, and that's your first blank there, but we also have what? This is on supplement 24 now. We have what? 10 horns. And so you have 10 horns mentioned in 13 and verse 1, having seven heads and 10 horns. Upon his 10 horns, 10 crowns. So we already can see from the 10 horns that they represent what? Probably 10 kings, each wearing a crown. Now, I apologize. I should have brought it. I planned to bring it, but I failed to do so. When I was in Europe a few years ago, I was looking for a particular item. I wanted to buy a set of coins, the 10 original euro coins from the 10 nations that made up the new Confederate States of Europe when they went to one type of currency and so forth. And so I was looking in shop after shop after shop there trying to find a set of coins that had the 10 original nations that became the reunited kingdom there. I couldn't find one. I couldn't find them in the euros. Later I did online. I couldn't afford them. I could find them, but I couldn't afford them. But guess what I did find then? I found 10 pennies, the euro penny, in a set, each having the 10 separate nations identified on those 10 pennies. What's the significance of my wanting one of those sets of coins? Well, I believe that we were actually seeing a prophecy being fulfilled right in our eyes. We saw the revival of the old Roman Empire. We saw the reuniting of Europe. We saw a lot of things taking place that is setting the stage for this to happen. And so the 10 horns represent 10 kingdoms. And Revelation 17, we just read that a moment ago in verse 12. It said, "And the 10 horns which thou sawest are 10 kings." So we have no question about the interpretation of this passage. And if you go back to Daniel chapter 7, you also see that this represents the 10 nations. And it says, starting there in verse 24, "And the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall arise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings." We believe that's speaking about the Antichrist himself. And so this symbolism will have the beast as the head of the United States of Europe, a revived Roman Empire, before he takes over his world dictatorship. All nations will welcome and admire him for the peace he has achieved, not realizing it will be temporary. All right, so we have in Revelation 13 the seven heads, the ten horns. But then in what do we have starting there in verse 2? We have what mentioned? Revelation 13, 2. Three animals. And what are the three animals that are mentioned here? Well, he says, and the beast which I saw was like unto, number one, a leopard. And then he had feet like a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And who is the dragon that's mentioned there? Well, that's Satan, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and his great authority. So he has the power from Satan. So we have these three animals mentioned. Very similar to the animals we have mentioned back in the book of Daniel again, recorded in Daniel chapter 7. He saw several animals. He saw a lion, which represented Babylon. He saw a bear, which represented Medo-Persia. He saw a leopard, which represented Greece. And then he saw a terrible beast, which was the Antichrist himself. John saw these animals or kingdoms in reverse order than what they're mentioned in the book of Daniel, in reverse order. Why do you think, and this is just, again, trying to wonder why, but why have I suggested, if you've already looked ahead in the notes, why have I suggested that John saw them in reverse order from what Daniel saw them? Yeah, Daniel is looking back at history that's already taken, John is looking back at history's already taken, and he's taking him from the closest to the furthest. And then Daniel is looking ahead, and so he has them in opposite order. But the final world empire over which the Antichrist will rule is probably a combination, because it has the head and the feet and the mouth of these various, it's probably going to be that he is going to have qualities and characteristics of all these former kingdoms. But then they're all going to be combined, so that the Bible talks about him being a what? Terrible beast. A terrible beast. And so we see just this symbolism going on here about the beast. His heads, his horns, and the other animals that he is likened unto. Now, having said that, let's complete this chapter 13 study. And as we do so, we're going to look at the counterfeit Christ is being presented to the world here in chapter 13. And what will happen next? This, again, is kind of parallel to the roles. But in Revelation 13:3, what's the first thing that will happen once this person is presented? Here it says in verse 1 and 2, I stood up on the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea. And the beast which I saw was like unto. And then what, verse 3, what was the reaction? Wonderment. All right, so we have, first there will be wonder. And what was the cause of this wonder? Yeah, he appears to have received a deadly wound, and then what happened? He revived and was healed, and it even says that it was a wound to death. And this deadly wound was healed. We've already suggested that this is a false resurrection, because he's the Antichrist, a counterfeit resurrection. And so we see this one filling all with wonder and awe. And then in chapter 4, what will be the very next thing? Next, there will be worship. And here we have worship in verse 4. And they worshiped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And so we have wonder and we have worship. And then in the next verse, verses 5 and 6, what do we have? Words. All right. We have great words. And they were given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. And power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And so we have words. And then what do we have in verses 7 to 10? War. Yeah. And says, and it was given unto him to make war with the saints and overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations, and all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him whose names are not written in the book of the life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If a man have an ear, let him hear. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with a sword must be killed with a sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. And then we end chapter 11 with a picture of the false prophet whose whole job is to deceive and cause others to worship the beast and the dragon. And so the false prophet's coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. And he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them that dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he doeth great wonders. So as this false prophet, he's going to be able to do some tremendous wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. So as a false prophet, who's he going to imitate here? Which true prophet? Elijah. Elijah called down fire from heaven. And so here's going to be the false prophet calling down fire from heaven in the sight of men. And verse 14, he deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand and on their foreheads, that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. 666. Why is the number of man 6? Most would refer to that as fact that that was the day of his creation, on day 6, the number of man. And so he is a culmination of all that, and his numbers repeated 3 times, 666. Now, as we close this study and then get ready to move into chapter 14, let's just pause for a moment here. Let's talk about this mark of the beast for just a moment. Years and years and years ago, when I first started studying prophecy, this whole mark was a tremendous mystery. Couldn't really understand how something like this could ever take place, where you have to receive a mark and you couldn't buy or sell without it. I know some of you have studied prophecy and heard and read things. Would that be possible today? How might it be possible today? Yeah, with all the things that are going on in the area of computer chips and all kinds of things and as was mentioned, biometrics and so forth. Today, you can take your dog to the vet and have what take place to your dog? He has a microchip put in. What's the purpose of the microchip? Yeah, in case the dog gets lost. Do you have microchips in your dog? Two of them, all right. If you ever find your dog, just take him to the vet and they're scanning him with a microchip, okay? If they can do that with dogs, certainly they can do it with humans. In fact, does anyone know what a smart card is? What is a smart card? We're talking about a card that's some type of a credit card type thing, a smart card. Cardies? It has a chip in it. It's not just a plain card. It has an electronic chip in it. And they aren't doing it now, but the potential there is that eventually, someday, they might be able to put all of your information on computers, a little chip. That's all your medical record, all of your financial records, everything can be kept on that chip. And so you could have a card that you could, but what would be the problem with a card? And somebody else could maybe use your card. So rather than having a card, if they just somehow embedded those things under your skin or under the skin of the forehead, again, there would be the potential that all you have to do is have your hand scanned or your head scanned, and they can get all your information. And without that, you couldn't either do what? Buy or sell. They can control it all. Yes, Carolyn. Right? They don't have to use a pass or a card or anything. They just, and nobody can check in for them either, right? So there's already the technology that exists, so that we can readily see how this could be fulfilled in the day in which we live. 30 years ago, you couldn't imagine that. But it's here today. And it's not hard to understand that these things could readily take place in the world in which we live. Any other comments or questions as we close chapter 13 And I know we've been in this chapter for about four Sundays now, but we're going to move on to chapter 14 now. But we do have that very important personage called the Antichrist. He's a key character in the book of the Revelation. Yes?
I remember reading much the same thing about that. Is that earlier in Revelation where it speaks about the two prophets, where they're slain and the whole world sees them?
That'll come up a little bit later.
Right, we're the first generation. Right.
Almost instantaneously it can be broadcast with the satellites and everything around the world. So, yes, that's coming up in our study yet. All right, let's stand together and let's